Morning. Today's daf in Pesach Mir Aleph. We're on the mission on the bottom of Yudim and Beis. We continue with the discussion of Bedikas Chametz. Beginning the Masechta, started off with when to do the Bedika, or as we're going to clarify in just a moment, when to start the Bedika. Bedika should be done on the night of Yudalad, Lel Yudalad, the mission's reference, or La Arba Asar. And then the next mission, which is on Tess, that mission talks about a house which is Cheskaso Baduk. You check the house. And now that the house is checked, is there anything that would impair that chazakah? Anything which would disdain the presumption that the house has been a checked house? And that's been covering our daf now for the last couple of days. And now we continue with the Mishnah. We are in the Mishnah on the bottom of Yudim and Beis. And the simple reading of the Mishnah is that you have to check more than once. Simple reading. The Gemara is not going to go with the simple reading, but let's go right now with the simple reading of the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Omer, Rav Yehuda is of the position Bodkin, or Yudalad Uvi Yudalad Shachris Uvi Sha'a Sabir. So according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, so you're going to be doing a Bedika on three occasions. You're going to be doing on the night of the 14th, the morning of the 14th, and also Sha'a Sabir. Sha'a Sabir, what does that mean? So Sha'a Sabir is the time in which we're going to be burning the Chametz. Now, as we already established, we did this on Daf Hay. Chametz is going to be Aser at midday at Chatzos Hayom. Chametz is going to be Aser Minatara. So you're going to be doing the year before that. So let's assume on a perfect day, going from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., every hour is going to be one of the Sha'uz Manios of 60 minutes. So that means then that the sixth hour of the day is going to take us from the 11 a.m. to 12 noon. So that's Sha'as HaBir, that's the time that you're going to be doing Bir. So then you're going to be doing Bedika a third time. The simple reading of Rabbi Yehuda is that there are going to be three Bedikas. The Bedika and the evening, morning, and then once again during the sixth hour. Chachamim Amrim. Lo badak or yudal yivdok biyudalin. Lo badak biyudal yivdok besoch hamoed. Lo badak besoch hamoed yivdok laachar hamoed. Shitas chachamim is that no. If I didn't do a bedika on the night of the 14th, then do a bedika in the morning. If I didn't do a bedika on the morning of the 14th, then yivdok besoch hamoed. Then do a bedika besoch hamoed. Now that expression over there, interesting Rashi over here. Rashi writes besoch hamoed b'sha'a shishi shehu moed habiur. Rashi says that B'Sha'as HaMoed over here is the sixth hour. And that's not what we would have expected. B'Sha'as HaMoed, we would have said, it said something along the lines of check during Pesach. Anyway, Rashi says the sixth hour. And then the Mishnah, and then the Shitas Chachamim, L'Badak B'Soch HaMoed, Yivdok La'achar HaMoed. Then do a Bedika La'achar HaMoed. What does that mean? Let's go back to Rashi. Rashi writes La'achar HaMoed, Mishesh'os V'Lamala, Achetachshach. The afternoon of the 14th, so then do a bedika then. And then the mission concludes. The mission says that which you leave over, meaning after you do the bedika on the night of the 14th, you want to leave over a little chametz breakfast? Perfect. Make sure to put it in a makom sina so that you won't have to do a bedika again. And as we already learned earlier in our perek, what that means to say is that if you see a mouse going along and taking the chametz to another location, so now you know that all that good work of bedika that you've done, it's undone, and you got to do the bedika again. Okay. Rashi's reading of the Mishnah is super interesting because clearly in the Mishnah what we're having over here is a debate between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. At this point in time, we don't have good pshat in Rav Yehuda. Right now, I'm going to say the pshat in the Mishnah of Rav Yehuda the way the Gemara initially understands it, that there needs to be three bedikas that are done. Fine. And the sheet of the Chachamim is no. You only need to do one bedika. These other points are just simply checkpoints where if I didn't do a bedika at an earlier time, which obviously I should have done, so then you'll do a bedika at a later point in time. So if you didn't do the bedika on the night, do it in the morning. If not the morning, then the B'Sha'as Sabir, which is the sixth hour. If not then the afternoon. Rashi's explanation of the phrases of the Mishnah is rather interesting. B'Soch HaMoed, that's the sixth hour of the 14th. La'achar HaMoed, that's the afternoon of the 14th. That's a little bit strange that that's the language that it makes reference to. And Tosos over here is bothered by Rashi's understanding of the Mishnah. See the last Tosos over here. Perisha Kunshus B'Sha'as Shishis. He's explaining B'Soch HaMoed is the sixth hour. And Tosos asks the question, and hopefully you're wondering the same question yourself. V'Kasha de la Rabbi Yehuda Kari Le'Sha'as Abir V'Lama Shona Et L'Shona. So Tosos says, you know, we just described the sixth hour earlier in this Mishnah. In fact, the sheet of Rav Yehuda is that Sha'as HaBir is a reference to the sixth hour. And so now the sheet of the Chachamim is calling the same sixth hour not Sha'as HaBir, but rather B'Soch HaMoed. That's very strange. Tosfos offers a different pshat altogether of what the Mishnah means. But then, I'm going to skip to the end of the Tosfos, and he's going to say, but I'll tell you what, though, Rashi here is being consistent. How is he being consistent? Because we go back to the first Rashi of our Masechta. It's actually the second Rashi, but again, fundamental issue. It keeps coming up again and again. Why do the Bedikah altogether? What is the purpose of the Bedikah? So Rashi, in the beginning of the Masechta, taught us that the purpose of the Bedikah is so that one did not violate lo yirav lo yimatzei. You're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach, so therefore the Bedikah is to make sure that I do not violate that isra val yirav val yimatzei. That's Rashi in the beginning of the Masechta. Tosfos doesn't agree. We've gone over this already a couple of times. But Tosfos over here notes Rashi's being consistent, meaning Rashi cannot fathom. Tosfos writes this at the end. I'm just paraphrasing. Rashi can't fathom that we're going to be doing a Bedikah on Pesach, after Pesach. The whole purpose of the Bedikah is that we eradicate chametz so that we don't violate Bal Yirav Bal Yimatzei. When are you violating Bal Yirav Bal Yimatzei? On Pesach itself. So therefore, it's inconceivable for Rashi that we're going to be doing a Bedikah on Pesach itself. And certainly after Pesach, La'achra Moed, that's a reference to after Pesach. After Pesach, there is simply no longer an Isra of Bal Yirav Bal Yimatzei. There is an Isra of Chamisha Avar Lava Pesach, which we're going to introduce to afterwards, but that has nothing to do with ownership. That has to do with you're not allowed to eat it. So Tosfos points out over here that yes, it's a difficult shot in the mission that Rashi is offering, but I certainly understand it, says Tosfos, based on Rashi's position that he introduced to us in the beginning of the Masechta. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. My time at the Rav Yehuda. What's the basis behind Shitas Rav Yehuda? Rav Chisav Rava Rav Huna Dami Tavai Keneged Shlosh Hashbatzos Shebetorah. Right now, the Gemara is assuming, like we read the Mishnah, that Rav Yehuda has three bedikas that are necessary. Night prior, morning of, and the sixth hour, end of the morning. And it's based on three psukim in the Torah where the Torah says that you have to get rid of it on three occasions. One pasuk says, lo yirelecha chametz v'lo yirelecha so'or. Another pasuk, shivas yamim so'or lo yimatzei bevatechem. A third pasuk, ach b'yam arishon tashbisu so'or mibatechem. So for these three psukim where there clearly is an imperative to get rid of your chametz, so right now the Gemara is proposing that this is Shitas Rav Yehuda, three times that you have to do bedikah. So Rav Yosef says, I challenge this very pshat in Rav Yehuda, based on a brisa. The brisa reads, Rav Yehuda omer kol shelo badek b'shlosha prakim halalu, shuvein bodek. If you did not do a bedikah during these three times, you don't do a bedikah again. So amam b'mikan ve'elechu depligi. So what is clearly at issue over here between the Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim is from that point going forward. Meaning it's not the pshat that Rav Yehuda is requiring you to do three bedikas, you only need to do one bedikah. It's just, when's the optimal time to do that bedikah? So your first opportunity is the night of the 14th, okay? You didn't do that, morning of the 14th. And if you didn't do that, so then the end of the morning of the 14th, the sixth hour of the day, that Shitas Rav Yehuda. And if you didn't do a bedikah from that point going forward, so then you don't have to do a bedikah anymore. But it's not three bedikas, it's basically when's the last time that one is required to do a bedikah, which after that point in time, no more bedikas. And the Chachamim are saying, no, there's a later point in time. Now, what exactly is that later point in time? So this morning, we went through Rashi together. Rashi says that you'll have the afternoon of the 14th. Bedikah will extend until that point in time. Okay. After that point in time, you don't do bedikah anymore. It goes without saying, but I'll say it, obviously. After that point in time, you're still going to do a bittul, but you're not going to do a formal bedikah after that point in time. Good. So the Gemara now has offered a totally new understanding of Yehuda and Marzucha Masne Hachi. And Marzucha is going to say over the same pshat in Rav Yehuda, his brisa is going to read it even clearer. Mesa Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges based on the following. Rav Yehuda Amar Koshlo Badak Be'echad Mishlosha Prakim Halalu. In this brisa, in the second version, so it's the same point, it's just even sharper. Because if you don't check in any one of these three times, so shuvin in bodek, so then you don't have to do bedikah anymore. Amma b'shuvin in bodek hu depligi. So the Gemara says, so clearly over here, Rav Yehuda is telling you that after the sixth hour, you do not do a bedikah bichlal, which means that up until that point in time, you only need to do one bedikah. And the Gemara goes on, Ela Rav Yehuda nami im lo bada kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, so we now have a better understanding of Rav Yehuda. It's that the morning bedika is if I didn't do the evening bedika. And the bedika during the 6 hour is if I didn't do either of the previous two bedikas. Now, what's that the issue over here? Meaning, now that we have a new and refined understanding of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, so what's that the issue over here? What's at the core of their debate? So the Gemara explains that according to Rabbi Yehuda, here's the story. You'll do bedika, but only before the chametz becomes asr. Once the chametz is asr, so then don't do bedika anymore. Because if you do bedika after chametz becomes asr, and you find chametz, so you're going to be tempted to eat it. Again, it's habitual. It's something we've been doing for the rest of the year. And so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that a bedika would lead to possibly eating, so don't do a bedika b'shas isr. And the Chachamim don't have such a gzera. That is the Gemara's setup of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Umigaz Rabbi Yehuda, we continue now in the Gemara on the second to last line of Yud Amud Beis. Umigaz Rabbi Yehuda, Dilma Asil Amechel Mineh. Is Rabbi Yehuda really concerned that if you find chametz b'shas isr, you're going to eat it? Let's compare that to another Mishnah, notably a Mishnah in Menachos, Tanan. Mishakar Rav HaOmer Yotzin Motzin Shoka Yushlaim. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer Beratzon Chachamim Hayosin. Okay, let's go over a little bit of background so that we understand this Mishnah good and well. In Eretz Yisrael and presumably also outside of Eretz Yisrael, so there's an Isra called Chadash. Any grains that grow over the course of the season. The typical wheat season is over the winter. Any grains that grow over that grow from the ground in that season is now subject to the Isra of Chadash. Nobody is allowed to eat from those grains. When? Until the Karban Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. The 16th day of Nisan, the Karban Omer is brought after Hakravas Karban Omer. So now the Chadash becomes Yashan, and now those grains are in fact allowed to be eaten. Lengthy discussion. I'll just bring it up. Lengthy discussion in terms of where did the Isser go. In Eretz Yisrael, everyone is careful about this Isser. In Chutz Aretz, and it's true in America, but it's true also going back for many generations. It's true in Europe as well. People weren't careful about the Isser of Chadash. Where did that Isser go? It's an independent discussion. It's an important issue, but it's something we're not going to be discussing right now. Anyway, so with that stated, the Mishnah over here is describing. On the 16th day of Nisan, immediately after the Kravas Omer, so you're going to be able to find grains from this past season that up until just a couple of minutes earlier, a couple of hours earlier, was usher. And as the Mishnah tells us, quite frankly, you're going to go to the markets in Yerushalayim, and what you're going to find that it's filled with kemech v'kali, it's filled with flour, and it's filled with toasted grains of this year, which means, obviously, that these grains were harvested. Clearly, they were not harvested that morning. The markets are filled with these grains. And so what it must mean is that before Pesach, these grains were harvested and just simply set aside until the Karban Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach, on the 16th day of Nisan. And then basically the store owner said, okay, now come and get it. And now everyone's able to get fresh grains. And it's now mutter because it converted from being chadash to being yashan because of the kravas haomer. Now, how did the chachamim feel about this? So we have a machlokas tanaim, which we just read in the Mishnah in Menachos, whether the chachamim were supportive of this behavior or not. And Rabbi Meir says the chachamim did not like it. And presumably, according to Rabbi Meir, the chachamim didn't like it. Why? Because you're playing with fire. Meaning, up until the second day of Pesach, all these grains are aser min haTorah. It's chadash. And therefore, if I am working these grains and processing these grains, there's a chance we're going to eat it. And so Rabbi Meir says that the Chachamim did not like this practice. Meaning, the practice happened. According to Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim weren't happy with it. And according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim were perfectly fine with it. Now, what are we hearing right now? And the Gemara spells it out, as we now on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, V'loka Gazer Rav Yehuda Dama Asal Amichel Meinei. Clearly Rav Yehuda over here, whose understanding is that the Chachamim endorse the practice of people harvesting and processing the grains of Chadash prior to the second day of Pesach, having them ready and basically prepared in the marketplace so that they're ready for sale immediately after the Karvas Homer, and Rav Yehuda is not worried that people are going to go ahead and eat Chadash. And what's the difference over there where Rav Yehuda is not concerned, and over here by Chametz where Rav Yehuda is concerned? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of answers to this question, three in total. Amar, now in our Gemara, the Gerus that we have is Rava, but probably should be changed to Rabba. Amar Rabba Shani Chadash Mitoch Shalo Hitartalo Ela Ayide Kitav Hu Zachor. So the Gemara says, well, the processing of grains, of Chadash grains, can only be done Ayide Shinui. It can only be done in an unusual manner. Let's say, for example, for harvesting, it's harvested with your hands. So not with machinery or not with a sickle. And so therefore, because the allowance to harvest it is only done ayide shinui, so therefore people remember. So amalei abayi tenech b'shas ketifa techina v'arkad amayi kalameimar. Good, the harvesting is done b'shinui. So what about the grinding of the flour? What about the sifting of the flour? So halo kusha, the Gemara says, that's not a difficulty. Techina b'rachaya diyad hakada agabi nafa. The Gemara says that even the further processing of the chadash grains are done with a shinui. As far as the grinding is concerned, it's done with a hand mill. And as far as the sifting is concerned, you flip the sifter over on its back. So everything is done with shinui, and the shinui is going to remind everybody, no, you can't handle it. So Elahadnan, the Gemara says, okay, consider now another Mishnah in that seventh parak of Menachos. The Mishnah says, "Kotzrim beis hashlachim ushe be'amakim avalo godushin." So the Mishnah says that one is allowed to harvest from the beis hashlachim, and this is before the second day of Pesach, before the 16th day of Nisan, and you can go to the beis hashlachim fields that are irrigated, and the amakim and the fields in the valley. What you can't do is you can't be godish, you can't heap it into piles, but you're allowed to harvest. Now, v'ukimna k'Rav Yehuda. Now, based on a number of sources over there in the Gemara Menachos, that Mishnah is going like Shitas Rav Yehuda. Now, over there, it says Kotzrim that you can harvest, and it does not mention anything about a Shinui. So, Rabbi, your answer is that it's done Alidei Shinui. It's just simply not supported by that Mishnah over there in Menachos. Rashi over here goes through a little bit more of the Gemara Menachos over there. There are some fields that you are allowed to harvest prior to the second day of Pesach, some fields you're not allowed to harvest. The basic upshot of Rashi is that if the fields are of a lesser quality, which is what the Mishnah here is describing, the Beis HaShlachim, the Amakim, these are fields that are producing less than best quality wheat that you're allowed to harvest before the second day of Pesach. Why? Because these particular grains are never eligible to be brought for the actual Karban Omer itself. Because what do you bring from the Karban Omer? Only the best grains are brought for the Karban Omer. Happens to be the Karban Omer is a barley offering, but neither here nor there. In other words, but the katsira that's done for the actual Omer itself, that has to necessarily be done on the evening of the 16th day of Nisan. But over here, as Rashi points out, the Mishnayos over here are describing the fields that are producing the inferior quality grains, and therefore it could be harvested even at an earlier date. Anyway, but the point of all this is that it's done and not with a shinui. So ma'ika l'meimer. So now, the answer that was proposed by Rabbah is that Rav Yehuda over here is not worried. It's because, by chadash, it's because everything's done with a shinui. We just don't have the brisa supporting that idea. So ela amar abaye, so the Gemara now is going to give a second answer. And that is chadash badal minei, chametz lo badal minei. You have to look at the habits of people. Meaning, when you have those new grains growing every single season, it now becomes part of the mindset of all of us that we can't eat it until the Omer is brought. So once we start with a mindset of Isser, so Chadash Badominei, people know, we have been habituated already to know, you're not allowed to eat it. We weren't allowed to eat it from the moment it started growing. And so therefore, with that mindset, so Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm not worried. But when it comes to Chametz, what have we been doing with Chametz year-round? We've been eating it year-round. And now we're going to pump the brakes. And now for 7 days we're not going to eat it. And not only that, by the way, keep in mind we're talking about the 14th day of Nisan, so we're slamming on the brakes. We've been eating chametz the whole year, and now here's the first day in the year in which we're not going to eat it. So lo badul minei. People aren't going to be able to stop themselves that easily from breaking a habit. It's not a bad habit, by the way. We're talking about eating chametz, right? It's wonderful. So the Gemara says that that's the difference between Chadash versus Chametz, the mindset of where people were regarding whether or not they viewed it as Isser from the beginning, like Chadash, or like Chametz, where it was Heter year-round. Amar Rava de Rabbi Yehuda de Rabbi Yehuda Kasha de Rabbanan de Rabbanan lo Kasha. So Rava says to Abaye, your answer is excellent, but it's incomplete. Because all you did was miyashiv the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda. How about the difference between the Chachamim? So de Rabbi Yehuda lo Kasha kedeshaninan. So what Rava now is going to do is just simply supplement the answer of Abaye. Meaning, keep your answer with regarding Rav Yehuda. When it comes to Chadash, badol minei. When it comes to Chametz, lo badol minei. Excellent, then keep it. What we're going to do over here is just simply add, and that is explain the stira between the Chachamim. De Rabbanan nam lo kasha. Hu atzma mechazor lav esarfo mechel ka'achol minei. Consider the following. According to the Chachamim, what were the Chachamim? Now, when we say the Chachamim, we mean Rav Meir's view of the Chachamim as it relates to Chadash, which is the Chachamim were worried that people are going to eat it, as opposed to the Shitas Chachamim here by Chametz, which is, you can look for Chametz even B'Shas Isser. And don't worry, nobody's going to come to eat it. And so what Rav is doing now is saying, the Chachamim I can resolve as well. Because when it comes to Chadash, so the Chachamim basically are afraid. Right? You're playing with Isser. Right? You're harvesting the Isser. You're grinding it. You're sifting it. So eventually what's going to end up happening is people are going to eat it. That's the Chachamim as it relates to Chadash. But the Chachamim as it relates to Chametz, consider the following. What are we doing right now in Erev Pesach? We're on a search and destroy mission. If we're in a search and destroy mission, so when you find Chametz, are you going to come to eat it? Of course not. Meaning your whole purpose of looking for it is to destroy it. And now you're going to go ahead and eat it? So that's the Chachamim's, that's the explanation of the Chachamim as to why Chametz is different than Chadash. Beautiful. So now, between Rav and Abaye, which is, by the way, the previous Shita, probably was Rabba, but between Rav and Abaye now, we have resolved the stira within Rav Yehuda. We've also resolved the stira within the Shita of the Chachamim. Rav Ashi Amar de Rav Yehuda Lokashi. Here's the Gemara's third attempted answer, and that of Rav Ashi. And that is, I can resolve the difference between Rav Yehuda, and that is, Kemach V'Kali Tanan. We're talking about flour, we're talking about toasted grain. And those are inedible. And therefore, that's why Rav Yehuda was not worried about the Chadash. So the Gemara says, Hadar Rav Ashi Berusahi or Bedusahi. Right? This comes up a number of times throughout Shas in terms of Rav Ashi offering a suggestion which Rav Ashi did not mean seriously. Right? Either it was Barah, just simply to be dismissed out of hand, or Bedusahi with a dollar, which means it was a joke, it was comical. Right? He didn't mean this answer as a serious answer to the question. Look, the toasted grain. You're telling me that I toasted in the oven, now they're inedible? And that's why Rav Yehuda's not worried? Okay, but what about before you toasted them? Meaning, obviously, when you harvested them from the ground, they're edible, they're not yet toasted. So what about before they're toasted? They're perfectly edible then. So the Gemara says, okay, so this suggestion of Rav Ashi, the Gemara says, simply is not to be taken seriously. And maybe you'll tell me, well, it was prepared with a shinui. So the Gemara says, we know that answer doesn't work. Because we saw the Mishnah that said that according to Rav Yehuda, right, that Mishnah that we quoted on the top of the Amud, that Mishnah of Rav Yehuda, where clearly over there, it was kitzira of the grains that was not done by derech shinui. So the Gemara says, Ella Rav Ashi, Ella di Rav Ashi Bedusihi. So this position Rav Ashi is not to be taken seriously, meaning it's not a serious way to resolve the steers between Rav Yehuda and the Chacham. Where are we right now in the Gemara? So we have gone through three different approaches in terms of how to resolve the stira between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yehuda, and between the Chacham and the Chachamim, vis-a-vis their attitudes towards Chametz, and vis-a-vis their attitudes towards Chadash. And really, when all said and done, the one answer that we landed on was the answer of Abaye and Rava. And that is that let's go first over Rav Yehuda, and then let's go over, the sheet of Chachamim. According to Rav Yehuda, so when it comes to Chametz, so you cannot be doing Bedika on Chametz after the Shas Isser. Meaning the 6 hour, the end of the morning of Erev Pesach, is the last time you're going to do Bedika, but you're not going to do it after that point in time. Why? Because if I'm looking at during a time of Isser, so then I may come to eat it. As opposed to Chadash, where Rav Yehuda says Chadash, you can do anything you want with the grain prior to the second day of Pesach. Of course, short, except for eating the grain. But outside of that, you can do anything you want in terms of processing, harvesting, grinding, sifting. You could do all that. You can even have it ready in the marketplace so that the moment the Karban Omer is brought, so it can be open to sale. What's the difference between chametz and chadash? So the way Abai and Rav explain it, it's the mindset, meaning that chametz year-round is heter, and now we have to make an immediate shift on Erev Pesach, and now assume it to be Isser. That's too difficult to break a habit that we had year-round of eating chametz. As opposed to chadash, the moment the chadash started growing, so we know attitudinally we assume it to be Isser, which it is. And so therefore, we're not going to start eating it once we've already habituated ourselves to it being Isser. That is a resolution of Rav Yehuda. What about the Chachamim who go in the opposite direction for Chadash and Chametz? But the Gemara says, okay, we can resolve that as well. Because as far as the Chachamim are concerned, generally speaking, the more you're handling something, the more likely you are to eat it. So if you're handling the Chadash, you're harvesting, you're grinding, you're sifting the Chadash, you're going to end up eating it. That's the Shita of the Chachamim. Why are they makel when it comes to Chametz? So the Gemara explained, Rabbi and Rav explained, that because when it comes to chametz, think about what you're doing right now. You're looking to destroy it. Since you're looking to destroy it, your whole purpose over here is to destroy it. So when you find it, you're going to destroy it. We are on the Gemara in Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We are going to continue trying to iron out all the shitas. V'chol heicha, the lobado minei migazer Rav Yehuda. So now, in our resolution of Rav Yehuda, in our accepted resolution of Rav Yehuda, the one that we just went over, the one offered by Abai and Rava, so the Gemara says, that means to say that when lo badol mineg, when a person is not habituated to holding back from something, so you're telling me that Rav Yehuda makes a gzera. Is that consistent? V'hatznan, let's take a look together at the following Mishnah, second perek of Shabbos. Lo yikov adam shofer shabetzav yimal ena shema shemen ve'inena b'tzad haner b'shul shetayim na tefes ve'afilu hi shel cheres Rav Yehuda matir. We're looking at some sort of contraption over here where basically I have an eggshell filled with oil. It's dripping into the lamp so that it's providing a supply of oil so that the candle will be burned on Friday night. And because now it's in, the oil's coming from the eggshell, and it's dripping into a separate container, a separate lamp. So therefore the concern is, according to the Chachamim, that we're going to end up doing, is that we're going to end up taking oil from the eggshell. Taking oil from the eggshell is going to be what? So it's an interesting Rashi over here. Rashi describes that. That's going to be kivui, that's going to be extinguishing. Now, okay, much discussion in this Rashi over here in terms of this being considered kivui in the sense that when you're removing oil, it doesn't seem like you're actually diminishing from the actual light itself. All you're doing is just simply reducing the amount of time that's being lit. Okay, generally speaking, we call that gram kivui, not kivui. Anyway, our focus right now is going to go on Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda says, no, it's mutter. So the Gemara says it's mutter, and obviously... he doesn't agree with the kivui point. And now over here, why aren't we concerned about this fact why aren't we concerned that look, oil, once you get comfortable with taking the oil from the eggshell, so then why aren't we concerned? Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda concerned that he's going to do so even from the oil in the lamp itself? That's the Gemara's question. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. So the Gemara says, "Hasam Hashem Chomer to Shabbos Middle Bedilei." So the Gemara says, "Well, over there, that's talking about Shabbos, and generally speaking, people's attitude toward Shabbos is that people are more chomer; they treat Shabbos with more severity, more seriousness than they do other Isurim, and that's why, in that case, Rav Yehuda is not worried under those circumstances." Rami, the Shabbos of the Shabbos, the Gemara says, "Okay, but I am bothered based on another brisa that we saw back in Masechta Shabbos. So Chevel Delishin Ifsak, if I have." The rope tying my basket so that I'm able to lower and lift my basket, my bucket from the water, and the rope snaps. So chevel delishin ifsak lo yeh kosher ela onvo. So you want to retie it, so don't make a knot, but make a bow. Okay, in other words, we're talking over here about the malacha of kosher. And according to the Tanna Kamma, making a knot would be a violation of kshira. So don't make a knot, but rather make a bow. And Rav Yehuda omer korech alav punda opiskayo vavash lo yan venu. And Rav Yehuda's position is that you could take a belt and you could tie a belt to it, or you could take some sort of garter and you could tie that to it as well, but you cannot retie the string, not even if you're going to make a bow. So Kashi de Rav Yehuda, Kashi de Rabbanan, de Rabbanan. So the Gemara says over here, it seems like these positions over here are opposite what we saw in that Mishnah in the second parak of Shabbos. So Derabbanan Lokasha, Shemen B'Shemen Michlef, Aniva B'Kshira, Lo Michlef. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, it really doesn't bother us that much. Because in the case of the broken string, where instead of making a knot, I make a bow, okay, no one's going to confuse a bow and a knot. Those are two different ways to fasten the rope. And so therefore, there's not going to be confusion. But if I take oil away from the eggshell, as opposed to taking it away from the lamp itself, that's really hard to differentiate. And so therefore, there's going to be confusion in those cases. And Rav Yehuda Lokasha, time of Rav Yehuda, La Mishum Digazar Aniva Atukshira, La Mishum Dikasavar, Aniva Gufa Kshirahi. And also, as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, there's no steer in Rav Yehuda. In the case of the oil and the eggshell, take the oil away from the eggshell, no problem whatsoever. Rav Yehuda does not make a gzera. As opposed to him not allowing to retie the string to the bucket, even with a bow, that has nothing to do with a gzera. Remember, we talked about this at the end of Erevin. According to Rav Yehuda, making a bow is just as much a malacha of kosher as making a knot itself. So this has nothing to do with a gzera. This has to do with an actual issur daraisa of kshira, according to Rav Yehuda. Rami de Rabbanan did not. The Gemara says, okay, now let's see if the Chachamim are consistent, because we have another Mishnah over there in Shabbos. It's a braisa. So you can tie the bucket with a piskaya, right? That's some sort of belt, but you can't use a string. Rav Yehuda matzir, Rav Yehuda allows it. Now chevel damai. Now that rope that we're tying to the bucket. A little more context, please. Elam chevel da'alma. We're talking about a regular rope. Rav Yehuda matzir. So and Rav Yehuda is going to allow it, meaning it can't be. So kesher shokayamahu devade asale betule. So that's a kesher shakayama. In other words, you plan on leaving the rope there full time, and according to Rav Yehuda, you can't tie a knot. We just learned according to Rav Yehuda, you can't even tie a bow. So the chevel that's being described in that Mishnah cannot be talking about a regular string. Elapshita digardi. The string over there is a weaver string. Okay, now, I don't fully know what I'm talking about, but it's clear from the Gemara over here that the weaver string is something which is absolutely temporary. So it's temporary for whatever reason, and so therefore it's not an Issur Daraisa. The Gazur Rabban, Chevel Ardi, Atu Chevel Da'ama. So, Aval Chevel Da'ama, I'm sorry, Atu Chevel Da'ama, period. And so what is behind the sheet of the Chachamim? Chevel Ardi, which in of itself is Mutter, but if I get comfortable with the idea of tying this weaver's rope over to the bucket, even though that in itself is mutter, but I'm going to tie weaver's rope. And then in the next step, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tie a regular rope. And people are not going to be able to differentiate. So you see that according to the Chachamim, it seems to be inconsistent. In the previous case of the bucket, the Chachamim allowed to tie a bow, not a knot. Over here, the Chachamim do not allow you to use a weaver's rope as opposed to a regular rope. But the Gemara says, yeah, but that doesn't bother me. The Gemara says, yeah, but I can see the difference. Cheva b'cheva mechlef, aniva b'kshira lo mechlef. When it comes to ropes, so look, people are going to be able to differentiate different types of ropes, meaning once you get comfortable with tying a rope, you're going to tie a rope. Weaver's rope, regular rope, doesn't matter. But in other words, if the allowance to tie a bow, so everyone can easily discern the difference between a bow and a knot. Okay. That was a lot of smoothing out, meaning we had a lot of shittas that we had needed to smooth out, and it's totally understandable at this point in time if we're a little bit lost. I encourage you, take a look at the bottom Rashi over here on the Amud, not the last Rashi, Rashi Mishaninan, where Rashi basically does an excellent summary of everyone's shittah, the shittas of Rav Yehuda and the shittas of the Chachamim. For our purposes right now, suffice to say, everything got smoothed out, meaning we found some inconsistent patterns within shittas Rav Yehuda. The Gemara resolved. We found some inconsistent patterns in the Shittas of Chachamim. The Gemara resolved that as well. We are now on the bottom of Yud Alef Amud Aleph, and we continue in the Gemara of Chalhecha Dabal Domine Lo Gazer Rav Yehuda. So again, when a person has the habit of separating himself from something like Chadash, so Rav Yehuda says no need to make a Gzera. Okay, remember, all this started because we were bothered by the discrepancy between Rav Yehuda of Chametz and Rav Yehuda of Chadash. Let's just reset that quickly. According to Rav Yehuda regarding Chametz, you can't do Bedika after Shashishis, after the 6th hour of Erev Pesach. Why? because if I'm looking at it during a time of Isser, I'm going to end up coming to eat it. So Rav Yehuda says, because, and the explanation that we gave is that because when it comes to chametz, people have been eating chametz year-round. And therefore, it's going to be very hard when you pick up a delicious-looking cracker cookie, and you're going to go ahead and start eating it when you find it. So that's why Rav Yehuda says that when it comes to chametz, so egzera is necessary. Don't do the bedikah once you get to midday of Erev Pesach. Just do bittul. And as opposed to chadash, where from the moment it started growing, it was viewed as iser. So when it comes to chadash, therefore it's going to be, it's going to be there's a gzera not to handle the chadash. I just heard what I said. There is no gzera when it comes to chadash because the mindset of everyone is that it's aser. Good. That's where we started off our morning. That's the resolution between chametz versus chadash. This was, the Gemara gave a couple of other suggestions, but this is the one that the Gemara is most comfortable with. The Gemara now is going to challenge it again based on another Mishnah, and here we go to the topic of Becharas. So in the Vechol Hecha de Baldamine Lo Gazer Rabbi Yehuda Vatayin, the Gemara says, let's consider now the following Brisa Bechor She'achzu Dam. Let's say that we had an animal, and the animal circulation was challenging, right? The animal was ill, and it was having some circulatory problems. And so what would be a good way to treat the animal? So treating the animal would be a little bit of bloodletting. And what the Mishnah is going to tell us is, don't do it. Now, why not? Because in this particular case, we're learning a Mishnah in Bechoros, we're talking about a Bechor. Now, if I were to bloodlet, that would mean that I would have to pierce the exterior of the animal, possibly making a blemish in the animal. Now, we all know the halachas, we go over this numerous times, and that is when you have a bechor, so when it develops a blemish on its own, so now it doesn't have to be brought as a carbon, the kohanim can eat it right there and then, without having to bring it as a carbon. But what a kohen is not allowed to do is a kohen is not allowed to be matal mum, it can't put a blemish on the animal. So over here, obviously, we do not like to see the animal suffer. On the other hand, there's an isser of being matal mum on a bechor. So what the Mishnah is going to tell us is that you cannot bloodlet. Ein makizan. Let me read from the beginning, second to last line. Bechor she'achzu dam afilu yimeisei makizan lo dam divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that you cannot be makiz, you cannot bloodlet on this animal. V'chachamim amrim yakiz v'vavash lo yatal b'mum. And the chachamim say, no, you can bloodlet. Just make sure you do it in an area in the animal where it will grow back. Meaning, as Rashi over here explains, I'm saying it outside, hakazas dam bloodletting, it does not necessarily lead to making a mum. A mum is a physical blemish in the animal that does not regenerate. Right? Rashi gives the example over here. Let's say you split the lip of the animal. Okay, that split is going to remain permanently. That's a mum kavua. However, if you bloodlet, where you basically you're going in, I need a veterinarian over here. But you find a vein, you find an artery somewhere that is exterior to the skin, and you put the needle in over there, and it could regenerate. That's not a mum. And so the chachamim say simply, look, it's a very simple way to treat the bechor over here, and that is bloodlet, and do so in a place where it doesn't make it a mum. Good. Obviously, what's Rav Yehuda saying? Rav Yehuda saying, I know you could do that. I'm just worried. I'm concerned. If I bloodlet in an area where it's not going to make it a mum, well, it may come to doing bloodletting where it will become a mum. So Rav Yehuda therefore says, no, don't do it. So and the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, now Hausam. I'm sorry, the Gemara is answering, but the problem of the Gemara is that when it comes to the Bechor, what's the mindset of everybody? The mindset is it's Aser. It's Kachim. Rashi on the very bottom over here writes, Alpha Gav de Kachim Akol Bedilimayam. Everyone knows. We just saw this in the Gemara earlier. You have Chamit sitting in your house, and it belongs to Hekdesh. You don't even have to put a wall around it. Meaning everybody knows that when it's Hekdesh, don't touch it. Don't come into contact with it. Over here we're talking about a carbon Bechor. So it's Hekdesh. Everyone's going to stay away from it. And yet, Rabbi Yehuda makes a Gzera. Okay, so now what we seem to have now is a new inconsistency within Shitas Rav Yehuda when it comes to the Chadash, where everyone is Badominei, everyone has habituated themselves to know that that's Aser. So Rav Yehuda says, go ahead, harvest it, grind it, sift it, put it out in the marketplace. No one's going to eat it until they're allowed to eat it. And over here, when it comes to the Bechor, so Rav Yehuda makes a Gzera in this case over here, when it's Kachim and people have the mindset that they stay away from it, seemingly an inconsistency. Hasam itoksha adam bahul al mamono, as we now turn to the Amud Beis. Yeah, but the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference over there. When it comes to your money, so we all get a little bit crazy over our money. Right, we hate to lose money. We hate to lose any kind of assets. So I mean, any shari slave b'makom she'enosim bo mum, also lamave b'makom she'oseh bo mum. And so what Rabbi Huda is going to tell you is as follows. Look, if we start giving allowances to for you to bloodlet your animal, so you don't want to lose your animal, right? It's a significant amount of money. And so therefore, this bloodletting doesn't seem to work, and you're going to lose yourself, and you're going to end up bloodletting in an area of the animal that's going to make a blemish. That's Rabbi Huda in this particular case. So the Gemara says, V'rabana, now as far as explaining the sheet of the Chachamim, the Gemara says, actually, it's very easy. V'rabana kol shekein di'ilo sharis le'klal asul ame'eved. And the Chachamim say, look, if we don't give any allowances whatsoever, so then a person's going to be like, I'm going to have to lose my whole animal just because I'm not allowed to bloodlet, even in a place where I'm allowed to. And so then he's going to lose himself altogether, and then he's going to bloodlet the animal in an area where it makes it a blemish. Okay, so interesting machlokus over here between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim in terms of how to handle people as it relates to loss of money. But anyway, the Gemara says that according to Rav Yehuda, we've resolved that particular stira within Rav Yehuda. Now, as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, in terms of explaining that Mishnah Becharos, we say that people get crazy when it comes to their money. And therefore, we have to be gozer under those circumstances because we don't want people to lose themselves because we lose objectivity when it comes to our own money. The Gemara says, okay, Vahatanan. The Gemara says, but consider the following. And that is, it's a Mishnah Nedios. It's brought up in Beitza. Rav Yehuda Omer Ein Markidim HaBehema B'yomta Ben Meshi Oseh Chabura Aval Mekartzafin V'chachamim Omrim Ein Mekadrin Af Ein Mekartzafin. So we're talking about combing an animal on Yontif. Now there are two types of combs, and the Gemara in the Braisa in a moment is going to explain the two types of combs. But before we get to the difference between the two types of combs, why are you combing your animal? Because your animal is uncomfortable, and in order to alleviate the discomfort of the animal, it has mud and dirt on it, and it's just simply uncomfortable. So what you do is you scrape it off. Now, as the Braisa is about to teach us. So one type of comb is acceptable, another type of comb is unacceptable. Let's read on in the Gemara, and we'll go back. V'tanya ezu kider ve'ezu kirtzof, so kider ketanim ve'oseh chabura, kirtzof gedol ve'enosim chabura. So as far as these two different types of combs, when it comes to the kidur, so that's combs with very fine teeth. And if you comb the animal with that kind of comb, so you're going to make a chabura, you're going to make a wound in the animal. And even though that's not your intent, but nevertheless, you're going to make a wound in the animal, and it's going to be making a chabura, which is an iser on Shabbos and on Yontif. And as opposed to using the kirtzof, well, that's a comb with very wide teeth, and it's not going to make a chabura whatsoever. And so therefore, according to Rav Yehuda, so you can use a comb of wide teeth, of very thick teeth, but you can't use a comb of the fine teeth. Now, over there, Hasam di Shavaklei, Mayas Aminim Adam Bal Mamona. So the Gemara says, well, over there, if you don't do it, the animal's gonna die, and people get crazy over the money. But Hachi Shavaklei Tsar Ba'amahu, Lo Aminim Adam Bal Mamona. Sorry. Let's do that again, let's do that better. In the case of the bloodletting, so if Rav Yehuda does not allow any kind of bloodletting, so if Rav Yehuda allows any kind of bloodletting, so then people are going to get crazy because the animal is going to then die, and the issue regarding the achizas dam, the animal that whose circulation is really really struggling, so that animal is going to die, and over there, so Rav Yehuda says adam balo mamona. Meaning you're looking at the potential loss of the entire animal. Over here, what are we talking about? We're just talking about the discomfort of the animal. So over here, Rav Yehuda says, if that's the only issue, so therefore, I won't say that people are going to be crazy about their money, and therefore there's no need to make a gzera over here. You could use a wider comb, and people are not going to come to use a finer comb. Okay, let me read that again in the Gemara. Hasam di ishavikle ma'is aminim adam ba'ol amamona hacha ishavikle tzar ba'amahu lo aminim adam ba'ol mamona. So that is the resolution between the Shita Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda Maishna Agabe Chametz, the Gazer. Now when it comes to Chametz, Rav Yehuda makes a Gzera. Why does he make a Gzera by Chametz? Umaishna Agabe Kirtzov de Lo Gazer. As opposed to the coming of the animal, he does not make a Gzera. So Lechem, Balechem Michlef, Kidur, Bekirtzov Lo Michlef. So the Gemara says, because look, bread, right? In other words, people are so used to eating bread that you find bread on Erev Pesach, even though it's B'Shas Isser, you're going to go ahead and eat it. But when it comes to the different types of combs, there are different types of combs. Just because there was an allowance of the wider comb, no one's going to be concerned that it's going to lead to using a totally different type of comb, the fine tooth comb. Okay, good. A lot of work this morning in terms of resolving all the various positions of Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim vis-a-vis the topics of when to make a gzera, when not to make a gzera, when are people concerned about the money, when are people not concerned about the money. Okay, let's start with the next Mishnah. We're not going to get that far, but let's at least begin the next Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer Ochum Kol Shesh V'Sofim B'Tchila Shesh. Okay, this Mishnah operates with the assumption that we all know that once you get to midday on Erev Pesach, Chametz is Aser Min HaTorah. And so therefore what the Chachamim did is they put in a little bit of safeguard. Because when exactly is it noon on Erev Pesach? The answer is very simple. When it's noon. And noon, by the way, does not mean necessarily 12. It means the midday, the midpoint between the morning and the evening. And there is a machlokus in terms of how to, from what point in the morning we're measuring and what point in the evening we're measuring. For our purposes, suffice to say, midday. We'll call it nice and simple. Chametz is aser min haTorah at midday. But the Chachamim recognize that we were right, especially at a time when there were no watches and there were no clocks, so it's hard to gauge. So the Chachamim therefore put in a security, a safety net, where there already is going to be an Isser prior to midday. How much of a security net did they put in? So here we are with the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ochlin Kol Chamesh, you can eat Chametz during the fifth hour. Again, I'm just going to use the example of a perfect day because it's easy for us to think in those terms. So on a perfect day of 6 a.m., 6 p.m., where midday is 12 noon, so the fifth hour is going to be from 10 to 11. That's the fifth hour. So you can eat Chametz during that fifth hour, V'sorfen B'tchila Shesh, and then when you get to the beginning of the sixth hour, meaning immediately after 11 a.m., that's when you're going to burn the Chametz. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ochlin Kol Arba, V'tolin Kol Chametz, V'sorfen B'tchila Shesh, according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, you can eat Chametz during the fourth hour. That's going to be from 9 to 10. And then from 10 to 11, the chametz is simply suspended, meaning you're not eating it, and you burn it in the beginning of the sixth hour. V'odam Rav Yehuda, and on top of that, Rav Yehuda also adds the following, and that is shtei chalos. Shtei chalos, shel toda, psulos munachos agav itzdaba. Basically, there was messaging in the Beis HaMikdash in terms of which hour of are we on the morning of Erev Pesach. They would put out two disqualified carbon todas on a itzdaba as a bench, but over here it's got to be some sort of raised platform. And kol zman she munechas kolam ochlem, when you see the two loaves out there, so you have, that's the all clear sign. Everyone can still eat chametz. Nitla achas tolam v'lo ochlem, when one of the carbon todas has been removed, so now we know that we're in a period of suspension. You can't eat the chametz, but we don't burn it yet. V'lo sorfin. But once both of them now have been removed, that's the time when you do the sreifa of the chametz. And Rabbi Gamliel Omer, and here we are in the Mishnah with a third opinion amongst the Tanaim, and that is chulin echalin kol arba. When it comes to chametz, which is chulin, so then you eat it the entire fourth hour, meaning from 9 to 10, and then v'atruma kol chametz. Now, if it's chametz which is truma, which is obviously totally possible, meaning you are mafresh truma of grains, you then bake the grains into bread, which is chametz bread, so there, because it's truma, so therefore you're extended an additional hour. And I say you, of course I mean kohanim. Kohanim are extended an additional hour to eat the truma from 10 to 11. And then v'sorfen b'tchila shesh, and then burn everything at the beginning of the sixth hour. Okay, in the Mishnah we have three opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of what exactly are the safeguards that are enacted by the Chachamim so that we do not violate the Isser of Achilas Chametz after midday on Pesach. Let's recap our daf. We started off this morning with a Mishnah in terms of Bedikas Chametz. The simple reading of Rav Yehuda is that you have to do Bedika three times. And the Chachamim say that you do Bedika even more. Okay, but as we have now refined our understanding of the Mishnah, no, Rav Yehuda just simply says that you do Bedika once, but you can't do Bedika beyond the 6 hour on Erev Pesach. As opposed to the Chachamim that say, no, you do Bedika even beyond that point in time. Now, the way Rashi presented it, and we saw the Rashi at the beginning of Shir today, Rashi presented it that according to the Chachamim, you can do Bedika all the way up until the night of the Seder. Meaning the afternoon of Erev Pesach, you could do Bedika. That is Rashi's understanding of the Chachamim. Right? Why is Rashi saying that? Even though the language of the Mishnah is not that clear, but why does Rashi say that? So Tosus explains on behalf of Rashi, because the whole reason you're doing Bedika, Lishitas Rashi, is so that you do not violate Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh. Good. So the whole purpose of doing Bedika, therefore, only helps you prior to Pesach. There's no point in doing Bedika on Pesach itself. In other words, once you get to Pesach, you just simply do Bittul. Good. That is Shitas Rashi's understanding of the Mishnah. Anyway, what's the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim? Rav Yehuda does not want you doing a Bedika in the afternoon, because at that point in time, now the Chametz is Asur Min HaTorah. What happens when you find the Chametz, you may end up eating it. And therefore, Rav Yehuda is understanding a gzera is imposed because Shema Yochlenu, maybe you'll come and eat it. As opposed to the Chachamim, no gzera in this circumstance. Why? Because your whole mindset is that you are looking to destroy it. So since your mission is search and destroy, you find Chametz are going to end up destroying it. Good. And a good part of today's daf, most of today's daf, is to create alignment between the Shitas of Rav Yehuda here as it relates to Chametz on Pesach, and the Shita of Rav Yehuda when it comes to Chadash, where Rav Yehuda does not impose a gzera, and also to create alignment in the Chachamim, where here the Chachamim do not make a gzera, but when it comes to Chadash, the Chachamim do make a gzera about the Chadash. And what's the difference between them? And we saw a number of answers on the Amud Aleph. The answer that sticks is the answer that were offered by Abaye and Rava. I'm not going to go over it right now, but that's the answer that created the agreeable alignment between the Shitas of Rav Yehuda and the Shitas of the Chachamim. The Gemara then went on to try to make further alignment between other Shitas of Rav Yehuda, Shitas of Rav Yehuda as it relates to the Malach of Kosher. The Gemara does so as well. The Gemara on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph also was further bothered by the Shita of Rav Yehuda, because when it comes to Bechor, so Rav Yehuda does not allow any bloodletting of the Bechor, even though it's going to die, and the Bechor is, people have the mindset that they're not going to, the Bechor is Kachim, it's Isser, and yet Rav Yehuda is Xer over there. Gemara's explanation is, yeah, but that's monetary loss. And people get crazy when it comes to monetary loss, so therefore in that case, the Chachamim impose Xera. And there were a couple of other shitas that needed alignment as well, but that was basically a good part of today's daf. And then we finish today with the Mishnah on the Amud Beis. The Mishnah on the Amud Beis talks about the rabbinic safeguards of not eating chametz on the morning, towards the end of the morning of Yudalid, so that we will not come and eat chametz beyond Chatzos Hayom after midday. And a question amongst the Tanayim, exactly what the schedule is in the morning in terms of when you have to stop and desist from eating chametz. Three shitas in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Gamliel, and we'll continue tomorrow.